We begin our Monday with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. How are things, Ken, in swampy Washington? And I don't just mean the weather, but the weather, too.
Well, if we're talking about health care, we have to talk about John McCain, who
is
recovering from a he had a blood clot. A blood clot was removed from above his left eye, a 2-inch blood clot. And he had basically what's called a craniotomy, which is when you cut a hole in the skull to remove that blood clot. So he is recovering at home in Arizona. And, of course, that delays Mitch McConnell's effort to have a vote this week on the health care bill, as he promised. But doctors are, I mean, his McCain's doctors are not being quoted or are not talking, but other doctors are saying that there's no way that this could only be a week's delay. This could be several weeks. And that, of course, does not make Mitch McConnell happy, because the longer this goes on, it's possible that the opposition to the bill, already unpopular, will grow.
Yeah, I mean, McConnell must feel like he's in quicksand, not a swamp. He just cannot seem to get this thing unstuck and moving. Explain, Ken, why it is that the longer the vote is delayed, the more the opposition may build. I mean, isn't it a case where people get to understand the bill better? Are they hearing more from their constituents? Is that why?
Well, I think that's true. I mean, you could make the case that this gives McConnell and the White House, the Trump White House, more opportunity to lobby those wavering Republican senators to get behind the bill. But for one thing, McConnell and the Republican leadership are very frustrated that Trump is not doing any of that kind of, you know, bully pulpit kind of leadership. I mean, he says he wants a bill passed, and he's saying that I'm sitting here with a pen ready to sign it, but he has yet to give a speech other than the fact that Obamacare is bad and a replacement is good. There's really no argument for this bill. And as we've seen, as we've said before, the original Senate bill was so unpopular. I think NPR Marist poll had 17% approval. USA Today had a 12% approval.
Right.
Now they've added some conditions asked for by Ted Cruz, one of the conservatives who were holding out, that would basically give you two different options, a cheaper plan and a less comprehensive plan for those who are young and healthier. So, of course, you don't get much coverage, but it's much cheaper. But those who are elderly, those who are sick, those who have pre-existing conditions, the choices they would get, it would be much more harsh financially. And the more people hear about this bill, what they're offering, the more unpopular it becomes.
You almost get the sense, too, with the way the president has hung back on this, that he wouldn't be, that we could see him out there saying some perhaps unguarded things about what he doesn't like about the health care bill. You know what I'm saying? I mean, behind the scenes, he was calling the House bill mean. He has made all of these promises during the campaign about the health care bill is going to be this and this and this, and that Senate bill is none of that. I mean, can't you see him talking in a pretty disparaging way about this at some point?
Well, the reason I hesitate to answer that question is because, and this sounds like it's snarky, and I certainly don't mean it's snarky, but there are indications from people who are close to the president who are quoted as saying that he may not really know what's in the bill. He may not know the details. He may not know the specifics. So when it comes to him talking about the bill, he just says, I want it passed. He doesn't say it'll bring you X, Y, or Z, because he may not know what X, Y, or Z is. And you make a good point, Kerry, is that, remember, he was very laudatory when the House passed their version of the bill in early May. And then, as you say, he later called it mean. So, I mean, look, he's very mercurial. He'll say different things at different times of the day. But right now, as far as specifics, I don't think the president has ever addressed specifics in this bill.
Ken Rudin is with us. We've started out talking about health care. But if you have questions about Trump, Russia, politics, some of the latest polling on the president's approval rating, we'll open the phone lines here, 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. That's for a question or call for Ken Rudin, and then on Twitter at KerryNPR. By the way, Ken, I'm curious about which senators, if McConnell can actually get to a vote on this, which senators you're watching most closely. We know Susan Collins where she stands on this. I think we've been keeping an eye on Dean Heller. Who else that isn't obvious would you be watching?
Well, those are good examples, especially Dean Heller, because the popular governor of Nevada, Brian Sandoval, is completely against this bill. And Dean Heller was appointed to the Senate by Governor Sandoval. And, of course, the conservatives are out to make Heller's life miserable if he votes against it. So he's under tremendous pressure. He's hoping to get cover from Sandoval. I'd watch Rob Portman of Ohio. I'd watch Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia. Both senators are demanding much more money for opioid abuse. Now, they did add $45 billion for that, but apparently, for most observers, they say that's not nearly enough. Jerry Moran, who's a reliable conservative from Kansas, says that the amount of Medicaid cuts are really bad for his state, as well as opioid crisis. And there are others. There's some conservatives like Rand Paul, who said this is still too much like Obamacare, and I'm voting against it. So those are the ones I would really, really watch. Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. Right,
yeah. By the way, McCain, too, of Arizona. I mean, I guess they presume that he's a vote to allow debate on the bill, which isn't that the first procedural vote they have to take? But he's no guarantee to be a vote yes on this either, is he?
He is not guaranteed. He said there are changes I would like to make. And it sounded like he was almost saying, like, when this bill goes down, then maybe we could talk with Democrats, because there are a bunch of Republicans like McCain, like Susan Collins, like even Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, all of whom have said, we're making a big mistake. We're making the same mistake the Democrats made by passing it on Democrats only in 2009. What we need to do is just make health care great again for everybody and thus have Republicans and Democrats sit down together.
I have to say, I mean, we talked about Susan Collins. She's been very clear. When I try to figure out what Ron Johnson of Wisconsin is saying, he says one thing in one place. It's very, I think he's in some ways trying to have it always. He's difficult to figure out where he's going to end up at the end of this, Ken.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. When Ted Cruz was talking about opposition and Mike Lee of Utah and Ron Johnson, even though they have reservations about it, and Ron Johnson did express more reservations than other conservatives, I still think ultimately those are not the senators who are going to bring down the Better Care Reconciliation Act, as it's called. It'll be the Susan Collins's, the Rob Portman's, and the Lisa Murkowski's of the world. So those are the ones to really watch.
Hey, I was watching Senator Mark Warner of Virginia do the round of the Sunday shows yesterday. He's the co-chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee that's investigating.
Wait, is he this week's secret voice?
He is not. He is not. Too bad for you. You'll know who the mystery newsmaker is. You'll know it the minute you hear the voice.
Okay.
Anyway,
okay.
So Mark Warner is saying, he said this on Meet the Press and some of the other shows, quote, it feels like with this Russia investigation, every week we find another thread that we have to pull. And I thought, if you're sitting in the White House, that is the last thing that you want to hear the co-chair of this committee say, because it just sounds like there's new developments and places to go and more investigative work to be done.
Well, first, let's point out that Mark Warner is the ranking Democrat, you know, the Democrat on the committee. But having said that, I think I was bowled over by the emails about Donald Jr.'s meeting with the person who was linked to the Kremlin, who had dirt on Hillary Clinton. If that's not the definition of collusion, forget about whether the information was no good or it didn't pan out, or I walked out after 10 minutes because I didn't hear what I wanted to hear. The fact is that he got an email from this guy who said that he has a source who's close to the Kremlin, a Russian lawyer who has information about bad stuff about Hillary Clinton. Then he emails Jared Kushner, who, of course, you know, we'll talk about him in a second, and Paul Manafort, who at the time was the campaign chair. And they're all sitting down with this meeting. As it turns out, this meeting is with somebody who used to be with the Soviet Army. And it was a floor or two above or below where Donald Trump, a senior, was at the time. Of course, Donald Trump knew nothing about this meeting. And of course, see, my sense is that I hate to use this word, but it seems like they will tell you a lie until they're caught. So, of course, the original story was all she wanted to talk about was adoptions. And then when we see that the emails that the New York Times was ready to release talked about dirt on Hillary Clinton, they changed their tune. And, of course, he goes on, Hannity says, well, I'm transparent. Well, of course you're transparent because the New York Times was about to release all the emails. So it just seems like they try to get away with as much as they can until more evidence comes out. But even with the evidence that's coming out, Donald Trump calls it fake news.
But here's my yes, actually, we're in the middle of a media series this month, Ken, and we're going to be talking about and have talked about fake news. So here's the question about Donald Trump Jr. and the Russians. Does this feel to you like, and I was thinking about this phrase that I was going to use with you, does it feel like reckless ignorance to you? Like, what's the big deal? Who cares? You know, inexperience and arrogance and ignorance? Or does it actually feel like we're paddling as fast as we can to try to cover this up? I mean, what is this, with all your experience, Ken, out of D.C., what does it feel like?
Well, you know something, we've never seen anything like this. I mean, obviously, Donald Trump Jr. is not a longtime political operative, although Paul Manafort is. Jared Kushner is not a longtime political operative. I mean, I've seen psychological studies that basically Donald Trump Jr. was trying to win favor with his father because he really loved Ivanka the best. I mean, I've seen such amazing, amazing stuff. But the fact is that when you have a foreign power, Russia, which is not our best pals, offering dirt on the campaign, and Donald Trump Sr. was said, oh, anybody, you know, many people, then he said most people would have taken that meeting. That's not true. That should send out alarm signals. And I don't know if Donald Trump Jr. didn't see the alarm signals, or he didn't care, or he's invulnerable because he's a Trump. But whatever reason it was just wrong, and he just did it, and he's going to defend his actions until the next fact comes out and he has to backtrack again.
Call here from Steph in Minneapolis. Hey, Steph, hi. You're on with Ken.
Hi there.
Hi.
So I was wondering, like, I get that the Russia stuff matters, but I feel like a lot of people have the perspective that voter suppression had such a more real impact on the results. So I'm just kind of wondered why that's been the constant media story.
So why haven't we been talking more about voter suppression than the focus on Russia?
Yeah. All the other things that had a big effect, too.
Yeah, Ken, what do you think?
Well, what I like about Steph's question is that that is another angle, the fact that many people, there are more and more roadblocks being put in front of people to vote. And yet, at the same time, Donald Trump has created this voter integrity commission because he decided, he announced that the only reason he lost the popular vote to Hillary Clinton, and it's killing him that he lost the popular vote to Hillary Clinton, and he's still tweeting about Hillary Clinton and the emails.
I saw that.
He's still doing that.
Over the weekend.
And so because he lost the popular vote, he figured out that it must be 3 to 5 million people who voted illegally. So he has this commission, and he's stacked the commission with people like the Secretary of State of Kansas, Chris Kobach, who has a history of putting roadblocks in front of people, you know, in their ability to vote, longer waiting lines, shorter early voting periods, a voter ID laws, things like that. So, yes, I think I agree with Steph completely that is not insignificant at all. And to make it worse, Trump has formed this commission, which many critics feel that is going to make it even more severe and more difficult to vote in 2018 and 2020.
Ken, I was going to bring Steph back for a second, because Steph, I'm curious if you have been watching this court case out of Texas on gerrymandering. This is super interesting, if this is an issue that you're really interested in.
Yes, yeah. Definitely interested in it. Not following closely, but whatever you guys cover on it, basically.
Right. So I actually want to do a show on this. Ken, have you been following this trial that's going on?
There are several of those things around the country. And you know something? I mean, being what I think is a fair observer of politics, the Democrats did redistricting to a T in the 1970s and 80s.
Right.
They ran, Minnesota is a perfect example.
Exactly.
That in 1982, so many Republicans were lumped together in the same district, or their districts were eliminated completely, or they made districts so impossible that they couldn't win again. But the Republicans took what the Democrats learned from the Democrats, and they made it such a way that in some, like, for example, in North Carolina, I think they control, I'm just throwing out a number, 11 out of 14 congressional districts, and yet most people in the state voted for Democrats for Congress. So they lump all the Democrats and the liberals and African Americans and seniors in one district, and they make everything lily white around them.
And the reason for that is to give them more representation to go to Congress.
Right.
Yeah, just in case people are like, well, what's the connection?
And no, it's exactly right. So the Supreme Court is going to take up redistricting, but in the fall, but it's going to be legislative redistricting in Wisconsin, where the Republicans won an overwhelming majority of state assembly or legislative seats, and yet more people voted for Democrats. Supreme Court isn't taking up congressional districting yet, but watch the Texas case and watch what the Supreme Court has to say in the fall.
Exactly. Okay, so your mystery newsmaker of the week, here it is.
If you want to be president, realize it's about the people, not about you. And when it's over, and that's what a lot of these people who are real arrogant in office, they forget. Time passes, and it passes more quickly than you know. You want to be able to say, people are better off when I quit. Kids had a better future. Things were coming together. You don't want to say, God, look at all the people I beat. Are the people I worked over.
You know who that man is, don't you?
You know, I do. And it's interesting. I read the story about it. I heard it. I read all of what he said. But this is the first time I'm hearing his voice. And it didn't sound as strong as it used to. But that's Bill Clinton meeting with George W. Bush and a thing about leadership.
Right.
And he gave a very strong lesson about what we've seen. And he never mentioned Trump by name. But he's talking about what politics has become.
And Trump is clearly the elephant in the room. I mean, both of them, you can see there's a little bit of tension and discomfort as some of these questions start to turn to where the White House is today. So it's worth watching on YouTube, too. I will say that.
Absolutely. But I'm still not going to be satisfied until Republicans start talking like that, because it's easy for Democrats to talk about what's happened to this country. As long as Republicans are still complicit in what may be whatever is going on in this country, then, you know, we're in big trouble.
Ken, I'll talk to you next Monday. Thank you.
Thanks, Carrie.